This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Later this hour, we're going to hear the story of a family who was on a freighter in the Gulf of Mexico in 1942 that was sunk by a German U-boat. That's right, World War II, right off the coast of Florida. WGCU's Mike Canary will sit down with the author of a new book called So Close to Home, The True Story of an American Family's Fight for Survival During World War II. But first, the holiday season brings people together, from parties for work to family gatherings. And while it's all done to bring joy and happiness to everyone involved, all the moving parts can also be downright stressful, especially for people going through recovery or those struggling with addiction of any kind. Being around family and friends who you don't normally see all that often can also mean having to hide your habits if you're dealing with an ongoing addiction. Or on the other side of the coin, people who don't have family nearby or many friends can be pushed to substance abuse because of isolation. So for the first part of today's show, we've brought in two guests who are experts in this regard in order to explore these issues and strategies for dealing with them. I'm joined today by Brenda Iliff. She is the executive director of the Hazelden Betty Ford Facility in Naples. Brenda, welcome back to the show, and thanks for your time today.
Thanks for talking about this important topic.
And also Rosemary Blasvert. She is the recovery residence administrator at Salus Care in Fort Myers. Rosemary, welcome back to the show to you as well.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
And as always, we invite you to join our conversation. The number to call is 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCO. Brenda, I'm going to start with you with a big question. Why is it that holidays are so difficult for people that are working through or struggling with addiction?
Well, you know, we think it's the most wonderful time of the year, but it's not the most wonderful time of the year for many people, for people who are actively addicted, for people who have lost family members, for people who are depressed, for people who have financial concerns, for people who have health concerns. It's not just a time that's difficult for people with addiction in recovery. It's a time that's difficult for most of us.
Is it because of the pressure that we put on ourselves to make ourselves perfect once a year?
Absolutely. You know, what you were saying that Thanksgiving has given us a longer holiday season, which is great, but that's a longer stress period too. Our expectations are that this is the most wonderful time of the year, and if it's not, then I should make it the most wonderful time of the year, particularly expectations of women. We tend to be the central stabilizing factors in our networks, even though we are, you know, that's changing somewhat. But many times women take on that, I got to make this holiday great for everybody.
Yeah, I've got to make the Yule log cake. I've got to put up the – and people want to – it's a time where traditions come up, family traditions, and then there are those traditional roles that kind of just don't let go, especially during the holiday
season.
Yes,
but right? Yet there's maybe an empty seat at the table. Or somebody that doesn't show up who's supposed to show up, or somebody who can't travel anymore, or somebody who's left the family. So it can be a really difficult time for many, many people.
Yeah, it can get that way. Rosemary, I want to apologize. I think I messed up your last name earlier.
Beauvais.
I mispronounced it.
Beauvais.
I apologize. And that was a really bad rendition of your last name. So I want to say I'm sorry about that.
I know what you meant.
You knew I was talking to you. Is there something that you've seen in people that you work with over the years? Do you see the expectation for the perfection?
Oh, absolutely. A lot of times, you know, what does the family expect of them now? They are changing. The individual is changing, but the family really hasn't. So what do they expect when you go back into the family for the holidays? And it's scary. It's really scary. So the important thing is to keep your expectations realistic and try and stay down to earth as much as you can. And as was mentioned, the financial part is very difficult as well, just because you want to get that perfect gift for somebody. But financially, you could be very much struggling, so that just adds more stress to you.
Financial stress is just the worst, too, because it doesn't let up.
It is. It is. And you got commercials on TV all the time telling you this is the toy your kid wants, and this is what you need to buy. Oh, and look at those beautiful cars with bows on them in your driveway. So it's a time for stress financially for a lot of people.
It's a time to try to be realistic. So I'm going to ask, like, if you're a person who is struggling with addiction, and to say struggling with addiction doesn't mean you just now stopped drinking. You can
That's
be 20
correct.
Years in, and this could be a particularly tough one, and you could, you know, maybe fall off the wagon, so to speak. Is this the time when those kinds of things happen?
Oh, yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. It it can nip you in the bud so quick that you don't know it's there. It could be just a trigger. Going in through to holiday parties, even your work party, everything is about cheering in the new year, celebrating the holidays, you know, and most of that is associated with alcohol use, but also drug use. You know, if you're going back home to an environment that was involved in drug use, heavy drug use, or maybe not so heavy drug use, just partying use, then it's very easily to get drawn back into that. So the perfect thing is to have a plan in place for the holidays. Think ahead. What's going to happen? You know, where are you going? Make a plan ahead of time so that you're well prepared.
And this is as a person who is working through a person that's in recovery, we call
both,
it, right?
Both, yeah. New in recovery and those that have been there for a while.
Have been there for a while. Is there a point at which you don't have to worry if you're in recovery?
I don't think there ever is a point. It can happen. I've known people 30 years in recovery that it was just the right moment, the right time, and it happened. They used again. It might be a situation where someone long-term in recovery, they just give up so many hardships in their life, loss of partner, lifelong partner, loss of job, being forced into retirement. Things like that are all catalysts for jumping back in. But the important thing is to stay strong, stay straight, and be true to yourself. And having supportive environment around you and people who will support you.
Brenda, I wanted to ask you, is it true that just using one time or having one drink at a party can be the thing that can knock somebody off of a long-term recovery?
It is possible. You know, a lot of the people that we see that are losing their long-term recovery, there's warning signs before that. And it's the party that stresses them over. So for instance, particularly with our older population down here, they may have been put on an opioid or a benzodiazepine, which is like a pill form of alcohol. Mm-hmm. So already their brain is triggered with, oh, I could have more.
I'm sorry, I don't want to interrupt you, but in the brain, is the kind of the same thing happening when you're put on these types of medications?
Yeah. And their
that reward thing in the brain?
Yeah, it feels good. I mean, who doesn't want to feel comfort, really, you know? And whether we get that comfort from the liquor store, from the healthcare professional, from the opioids, from the benzos, from the cocaine dealer, from the meth dealer, from food, we all want to feel comfort. And so sometimes the holidays really trigger that need for comfort. I go to a party and I feel different, and I just moved down from Ohio or Massachusetts. I don't know anyone. I want to belong. And so here's the drink. So, yeah, that's why it's so important for people to stay connected. Whatever their support system is, really lean into it during the holidays. And if people are in recovery, 12-step groups or Celebrate Recovery or Refuge Recovery or their churches or whatever their support group is, they really need to lean into it.
And I wanted to ask also, you mentioned the medications that people can be on. And I think last time you were here, we were talking about the trifecta.
Yes.
The alcohol – okay, it was the anti-anxiety medication – a pain medication. And then if you add alcohol to that, it becomes very dangerous.
It can, yeah, people can overdose really quickly. In fact, we have more overdoses in our society with alcohol than with the opioids. But because we're so used to it, we don't really talk about those. And that's true whether it's someone at Hazelden Betty Ford or Salus Care or David Lawrence or, you know, those three drugs are probably, at least for in our what we see the most. Would you agree, Rosemary?
Yes, absolutely.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, the pot's usually there too, but it's not as life-threatening as those three drugs.
Well, I'm just thinking, though, it is a pretty critical time maybe to remind everybody that mixing those is not good, because some people may decide to have a few drinks at a holiday party and they don't normally drink. They usually just have their anti-anxiety medication and then their pain medication for their bad knee or whatever. If you this is not the time to start having a bunch of drinks.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because this may be the time of year that people would do that when they don't normally.
Right. Right. And also, as we have an older population down here, we need to look at the definition of binge drinking for people over 65 is two drinks for women or three for a man. That's binge drinking. That's not a lot of drinking, you know,
no,
at a normal party.
Like...
Yeah. I mean, for younger folks like you, it's four drinks for a woman or five for a man in a two-hour period. That's still not a lot of drinking compared to what we see in reality.
You know, I wouldn't have thought that because you'd think that as people get older – their tolerance or their what they get used to is greater, but it's considered binge drinking is only two drinks for an older person. What age?
Older woman, three for a man. The reason
go ahead. The metabolism is different as you age. So
I've noticed that.
Yeah. So so the alcohol does not it affects the metabolism. So when you're on medication and you need to metabolize that as well as the alcoholic, it really offsets and it may totally erase the benefits of the medication as well. Mm-hmm. And also it goes to the head a lot easier. There's risk for falls and there's all kinds of associated risks as well. So with the older adults,
yeah.
It's very important to consider
alcohol is pretty dangerous as we age.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
For some reason, I never thought of that, and I didn't even know it.
Yeah.
If you're just joining the show today, I'm talking with Brenda Iliff. She's the executive director of the Hazelden Betty Ford Clinic in Naples, and I'm also talking with Rosemary Bovaire. I got it right this time.
Yeah.
She's the recovery residence administrator at Salus Care in Fort Myers. We're discussing the issues that can arise over the holidays when it comes to substance abuse and alcohol abuse as well, and strategies for people who are in recovery. So if you'd like to weigh in on our conversation, give us a call now at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag of GCL. So I wanted to talk a little bit about the supporting people, not the addict themselves, but the people that are their support system, the family members who are going to be welcoming back for Christmas somebody who had an issue. What kind of things can people do if they know that somebody's had an issue before, that they're dealing with recovery? How can they be more supportive as family members or friends?
Well, to begin with, there's different situations, obviously. There are some that supported the addiction, some families that absolutely support the addiction. But then there's families who support the sobriety. And the best Christmas gift anybody can give is their sobriety to a family. Families need to understand that there's a lot of feelings and anxiety with their loved one when they come back into a family situation. And they need to account for that. There should be, if you're going to a family event, for instance, you probably want to maybe bring a sober buddy with you, or perhaps you want to have a parental figure or a sibling would also be a sober person at the party or the event, just in consideration of this person's sobriety. It would be good for the person in recovery to bring their own beverage when they go places, so they know exactly what's in it. Mm-hmm. It's very good to do that because who knows what's in the eggnog, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's something to be very cautious about. But families should be aware and be sensitive to the person in recovery. As far as the person in recovery, their attitude is. A good idea should be that they can't expect to go back to the same way it was because it's not. Everything is different in this person's life. And one of the primary things in recovery is changing people, places, and things. So when you go back to the family, there's a lot you can't change in that family dynamic,
mm-hmm.
but you can't. It's how the person in recovery thinks about that and what their plan is to do with deal with that. You may be going back to, oh my God, I can't stand my Uncle Joe. He's going to be at the party and he's always, the more he drinks, the wilder he gets. How am I going to deal with that? Well, that's when a sober buddy comes in really good. When you want to leave early, you should feel very comfortable to leave early.
Mm-hmm. I think it would be really tough if you're going into a family situation where everybody's just kind of heavy drinkers or something, and you're trying to not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In those cases, I would recommend you don't. Or if you do, make sure you have someone with you who can help you on your way out.
Yeah. And have an exit plan, like Rosemary
Absolutely.
Said. You know. And there are times you just decide, I can't go. You know, and you lean into your support system that's especially in early recovery. There's so many triggers among families that even in the best of circumstances. Another thing, too, is people early in recovery need to remember the family's got their own feelings and they may not want you back. You know, mm-hmm. we've had families say, I want them to stay in treatment over the holidays because we've had so many Christmases worried about will Joe show up or will Joe not or will he be drunk.
At least we know where he's at and he's safe.
Yeah, and he's safe. Yeah, yeah. I've heard families say, we're glad they're in jail. They're safe, you know. Mm-hmm. So, you know, putting realistic expectations for both the person that struggles with addiction but also for the family. And the other thing is if you're traveling, figuring out where can I go to get some support to get away from the family. Because living in a house with, you know, a bunch of people that are all traveling and they're tired and, you know, how can I go to a local AA meeting where there'll be other people or NA meeting that other people that are going through the same thing? And
that's
get
really
some
a
support.
Good idea.
Take
if
a time out.
If you're having to go back, you know, and travel outside of your area where you live and you have your sober buddies around, how are you going to find a support system that far away from home?
Yeah, and that you walk into a meeting and it's there. Mm-hmm. You know, people are so supportive in those meetings just about – Yeah, yep, it's hard. Holidays are hard. Even for the healthiest person, they're hard.
And that's a good time when you are traveling out of the area. Make sure you have these the meeting places and someone to call, you know, ahead of time before you even get off that plane or get off the highway. Make sure you know that these resources are available to you. And that's very easy to find. All you have to do is search what city you are in, AA meeting in Cape Coral, AA meeting in Saratoga, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. So just making sure that you have that in advance.
I think that's a really critical planning thing for people, especially being so far away from their normal comfort area and where their usual support systems are.
But even with technology, there's so many wonderful tools we have now. You can FaceTime your sponsor or your friend in Sarasota or wherever. And, you know, so your support system is really mobile and it goes with you. But you have to pick up the phone to use it or get online to use it.
And when you do go to a meeting and you're out of town, especially during the holidays, it's a good time to talk about that anxiety. And it's a good time to stand up and say, I'm having a hard time with this right now. You know, that's what they're for. The camaraderie and fellowship of those meetings are so important for your support. Use it.
Well, we talk a lot about everybody getting together and all these families getting together and all this, you know, family, friends, office parties, all this stuff. You can feel very isolated when you're going through recovery, even though you're surrounded by dozens of people who do care about you, but they just – you don't feel like they understand. So finding those support groups wherever you're at, it really makes sense.
Absolutely.
There are people that understand, but they might not be in your family.
It just always feels like you're the only one that's ever gone through it sometimes, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to also ask a little bit about this, you know, the potential of exposing an addiction in someone when you're in a family situation or even in an office party. And there's one person you start to notice, especially college students, maybe coming home after a semester or two away from the family, and you're noticing that there may be an issue. What kind of things do you think families or even coworkers could or should do if they're noticing something like that?
Talk about it. Talk. Mm-hmm. Don't ignore it.
Or should you wait till after the turkey's off the table? Or I mean, it gets really uncomfortable.
Yes.
That would be a one-on-one convo, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Or a family together after it is identified as being a real problem. It's time to talk about it. And I wouldn't send my son or daughter back to college without addressing that. For certain, and make sure that he or she has means to follow up with it, you know, and do what they need to do. And then don't lose touch with them. Always be part of their life as long as you have that ability.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And things to look for, particularly with college kids, are like erratic sleep issues, which they have anyway, you know. So yeah. It's really hard to sort out for folks. Also looking at maybe the lack of appetite if they're on stimulants. Are they disengaged? Are they spending a lot of time in their bedroom? But some of that is kind of normal, too, you know, so it's hard
really
to sort
hard
out.
To identify with teenagers.
It is. Yeah, or with teenagers particularly.
And but even the late teens, a lot of people can, you know, sometimes people mature a little late.
Or they experiment. But we also have to think about grandma and grandpa who come back down here or who live here that all of a sudden we're realizing there might be a problem.
They seem a little out of it.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, you said, when do we talk about it? Well, it depends. Because if someone's acting out at the dinner table and it's at your house, you may need to put some boundaries on right there, you know. But usually it's better to wait till the crisis is over and express concerns.
Yeah. Do you see a lot of people coming in around the holidays that are looking for help? I mean, is this a time when people are coming looking for help or thinking that they've got a handle on things?
It's a great time to get help. Several reasons for that. One is the family's scared, you know, so they might be glad that you're getting help. A lot of times people say, well, I'll wait till the first of the year. What we see is a lot of times most of the people who use our place are using their insurance and they want to get in before they have a new copay, you know, which makes a lot of sense financially. But then on the other hand, people don't want to be away for the holidays, or sometimes they want to do treatment because they have time off work and nobody will know that they went to treatment, you know, which is fine. You know, we'll work with whatever people need, but it is a really good time. The other thing is people die during the holidays.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the drinking and driving, the drugging and driving, the texting and drinking, and you might say I'll wait till January 1st, but you might not make it to January 1st too.
Good point.
Is it a good idea to do a New Year's resolution to get sober? Because it never really works with weight loss.
There's never a bad time to have the thought of wanting to get sober. Mm-hmm. There's never a bad time. So if somebody has that idea, okay, starting January 1st, I'm going to stop my alcohol use, or it's like smoking too. You know, it's a good – a lot of people make that resolution.
Do you see it working though?
In many cases, yes, I do. Mm-hmm. Relapse is almost inevitable in a lot of cases, for a lot of people. So the good thing about it is they know the consequences of their alcohol and drug use and or drug use. So they're more likely each time they try to be have a little bit more length of sobriety between those relapses. And eventually it'll click one day.
And a lot of times people say, I'm going to quit January 1st. And so their willpower will carry them for a week or two. But then if they relapse, that can be a good red flag that, oh, I need a little more. And that's where they might. So we see like a little bit later in January is when people are really coming to treatment because they mm-hmm. want to try it on their own. Or maybe when people are coming to AA saying, I guess I need help. And it's okay to say, yep, you need help. And we're here to help you whenever that is.
And a good plan should have somebody there be involved in some kind of fellowship. That is a great mm-hmm. plan for anybody who has a plan. Just like
Absolutely.
Quitting smoking, a lot of people have a plan before they do that. The same applies to any other addiction is have a plan. What are you going to do? Don't just say, I'm going to do it. Have the plan to make it work.
What would you include in a plan like that? Go to meetings or?
Meetings. Treatment, what is it that you particularly need? Mm-hmm. You can get free assessments. I know Salus Care offers a free assessment through their access department that would help a person identify, you know, what level of treatment they need. Not everybody needs a residential, but maybe a simple outpatient or maybe 3 to 4 visits with a counselor can set you in the right direction.
Or a healthcare provider or clergy. I mean, people mm-hmm. find many different journeys to finding freedom from addiction to alcohol and other drugs. There's a program online called aboutmydrinking.com. And it's what I like about it is it asks specifics about your drinking, but then a partner can also go on and talk about their families, and it'll help people sort out. It's just a screening, but it gives people some ideas of what might be helpful.
The online quizzes are great because you don't feel too committed to it, too.
Yeah, and it's anonymous. It's affordable, obviously. It's free. And it's easily available at 2 in the morning when you're feeling hopeless, you know. The other thing, it's important for people to look at their detox needs because particularly with the alcohol and the benzos, people will seizure. And with the opioids, people will be pretty miserable. So it's always important to, you know, they might need some medical help, whether that's an outpatient physician giving them some meds. Mm-hmm. For some people, they can do that, or Salus Care or other inpatient, detox places. But safety, safety, safety.
Mm-hmm. We've talked a lot about opioids over the course of the last few years, and we're still in the middle of what's being called an epidemic. Are you seeing people – I mean, I'm thinking about like this holiday season as an opportunity, like you mentioned, a few days off work being the time when you could detox. Does that?
Absolutely. Yeah, especially opioids. It's like a 5-day detox.
Right.
You know, that'd be a great time to go to a detox and if people wanted to.
Yeah, detox averages over 3 to 10 days generally.
Mm-hmm. 3 to 10, and that's opioids.
Oh, that's for opioids. Yeah, the longer is usually for opioids. But also people on benzos, they sometimes need a longer time as
they
well.
They do, yeah. What about alcohol with the older adults too? Yeah. We've had people. You know, usually they say 3 to 5 days for alcohol, but with the older adults, it can be 10. So it really varies.
I guess I didn't realize that there was detox for alcohol. I haven't.
The number one drug people die of is alcohol because they seizure. Yep. Number one drug, if you guys remember one thing from this interview, number one drug people die in withdrawal of is alcohol.
Yes.
Because of the risk of seizures.
Yeah. If somebody is seriously alcoholic, I mean like really long.
Don't tell them to quit. On their own.
Because they need medical help.
They need medical help.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Good to know. Good to know. So let's go – before we take off, we're almost out of time. Coping mechanisms for people who are in recovery, who are still – even if they've been in recovery for 30 years or 30 days – well, like 30 months. For people who are in recovery, what kind of things do you think they should have in their tool bag going into the holiday season?
Routine, routine, routine.
Have a plan.
Yeah.
It's hard to have a routine because every schedule's off.
It is, but getting enough water, drinking, going to if you're going to meetings or your support system, whatever that is.
Exercise. Eat right.
Eating right, yeah. Mm-hmm. Keeping the blood sugar steady. It's really the basics.
Always think a halt is one of the big things.
Yes.
If you're hungry, if you're angry, if you're tired, and lonely, those are key triggers for a lot of people. So avoid those things. Have a plan for each of
those. If you're hungry,
angry,
lonely,
and tired.
Yeah. If you're hungry, angry, lonely, or tired, what do you do?
You're vulnerable.
You're vulnerable.
You're human.
So then what can this addict then do, or would this person who's in recovery do? At this point, do they need to then like call their support team, go to a meeting?
Sometimes you just go make a sandwich.
Take a deep breath.
It's simple. It's a deep breath.
Take
well,
a minute.
Hungry,
yeah. Take a minute and just go. Yeah, grab a sandwich. Call somebody if you're lonely. There's so much you can do, but halt basically is to recognize those as your triggers. So hopefully, you recognizing them, you can do something about them. You have a plan in place. When
just
I'm hungry, I'm
going
to do this.
Just knowing what's going on. Understanding
just be aware.
What's going
awareness.
On.
Yeah. Awareness. Yeah.
And sometimes I think it's helpful for people just to put it in the frame of being human. You know, if I'm too hungry, my blood sugar gets all goofy and I get irritable and then I get in a fight with mom. Or if I'm too angry or if I'm lonely, who can I talk to about that? You know, all that we're talking about, the people that are going to families. What about the people that have no family, you know, and are alone on holidays? That's a real painful spot for people.
Or they feel like they can't go home, right?
Yeah.
That's where the support system is really important.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And also when some people feel that they're in recovery, I'm going to isolate and not do anything. That way I won't be exposed to anything. But that's not good either. And that's where the fellowship comes up again. Or other things to do. You know, you have some friends in your life or family in your life that are sober. Do things with them. Don't isolate. Come on out of that and enjoy life.
And sometimes recovery is about making a new normal. So what events do I want to keep in my life? What places do I want to keep? What people do I want to keep? What events do I want to modify? You know, that I go to the family party, but I only stay for 3 hours, not 12. What people do I want to modify? Yeah, I want to see Uncle Joe, but I don't want to be with him real long, you know.
Yeah.
What places do I want to modify? But what do I want new, too? You know, looking at those expectations. Maybe now I'm going to do a movie every Hanukkah or Christmas instead of run to the family. And I'm going to invite a newcomer from my AA group who's alone, too. Imagine that. I'm
going to
help somebody.
Yeah,
there's always
new people.
Yeah.
And certainly you want to avoid any emotional distress further. So keep your expectations, you know, where they should be. Don't expect everybody to welcome you or make changes for you.
Like you're not walking into your family's Christmas as the returning conqueror.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. It may not be that way.
You
probably should be able to come in as a conqueror because it's a very hard thing to go through recovery.
Yes, it is. But you'll get that love and support in the AA or rooms,
yes.
The 12-step rooms. Also, it's good to remember that a lot of times people do really well through the holidays, and it's after the holidays they relapse.
Yeah, that letdown time.
They get really depressed, and you know, the suicide rates go up, and so it's a vulnerable time of the year.
All right. Well, I really appreciate you guys coming in and talking with me today. We got a lot of tips for people that are not only in recovery, but the people surrounding them that care about them. So I really appreciate your coming in and talking. We've talked with Brenda Iliff, the executive director of the Hazelden Betty Ford Clinic in Naples. Brenda, thanks again. And also Rosemary Bovaire, I got it. Finally,
yes,
third time's a charm. For the recovery residence administrator at Salus Care in Fort Myers. Rosemary, thanks to you.
You're very welcome.
When we return, WGCU's Mike Canary is going to sit down with the co-author of a new book that explores the presence of German U-boats off the coast of Florida during World War II. It's an often overlooked bit of local history, and he'll be highlighting tomorrow at the South Florida Water Management Office on McGregor Boulevard in Fort Myers. The talk is presented by the Edison and Ford Winter Estates. I'm Julie Glenn. You're listening to Gulf Coast Live. Stay with us.